Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Meet the Author on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Denny Griffin, and for the next half hour, I'll be your host. The phone number, if you'd like to call in with a question or comment for me or today's guest, is 646-478-0982. 646-478-0982. And if you're on my webpage on Blog Talk Radio, the chat room is open and you can text a question or comment to me that way. Now, my guest today is author Mike Smitley, the author of Implied Contract, Prey, Dead Flies, and Ghost Hunt. Mike was born in Kansas City, Missouri, and is a retired police chief with over 30 years of service in all capacities of law enforcement. He currently resides in Missouri with his wife and two sons. He has a broad base of experience in all fields of public safety and municipal government. Mike has written 6 novels, and 4 of them, which I just named, are published. Mike also started Father's Press in the spring of 2006, which has rapidly grown to be one of the premier small presses in the country. Mike, welcome to Meet the Author.
Thank you, Denny. Thank you very much.
I want to get into a couple of areas here right off the bat. First of all, could you take your book titles, the published books, one at a time, and give us just a little description of each one, please?
Yes, thank you. My first book is called Implied Contract. It was written probably over 10 years ago, and that is a book that chronicles the life of a police chief who moves to a small town in Wyoming to get a change in his lifestyle and help and to raise his son in a more wholesome atmosphere. He encounters a serial sniper, which had not been written about prior. Stephen Hunter had written books about military snipers in counterintelligence scenarios, but this book was about a civilian sniper and a small town chief working with limited resources to try to capture him. The second book was written as Prey, and that book is written about a detective from San Francisco who's fallen from grace, who's had problems, and has been terminated from his job as a homicide investigator. He gets drawn into a 30-year-old homicide investigation up in Idaho, at Sand Point, Idaho, to be specific. And in that book, he becomes injured with another man out in the wilderness, and they are being stalked by a bear who has developed a taste for people. So it's more of it's kind of a detective story and survival story rolled into one. My third book was Dead Files, and that is a story about an officer who gets thrown into a cold case unit that is actually more of a punitive measure than an active cold case unit. And he begins looking at a series of unsolved homicides in his city and finds a connection in those homicides and begins that investigation that he's not qualified to conduct and gets himself in trouble with that case. And my fourth book is a sequel to the first book, Implied Contract. It is called Ghost Hunt, and it picks up where the other book left off, of course, and this serial sniper that is working in the small town of Wyoming is continued to work. In the first book, the lead characters move away. In this book, they're pulled back because their parents are still in that area, and they become victimized, which pulls them back into the investigation and draws them back into the area. Both the first book, Implied Contract, and Ghost Hunt really chronicle the difficulty and the complexity of homicide investigations in general and sniper investigations in particular because of the fact that snipers kill from such a long range. There are usually no witnesses and there's no evidence left at the scene. The suspects usually don't approach the victim, so there's no transfer evidence at the scene. So both books really highlight the difficulty of sniper investigations, which was borne out in the D.C. sniper investigation, I believe it was in 2000.
Yeah, Mike, can you hold on just a second? We have a caller on the line, and then after we talk to the caller, I have some questions to ask you getting back to your books. Hold
certainly.
Good morning, 404 area code. You're on the line.
Yes, my name's Larry Daniels, and I've been in law enforcement for 30 years, and I really enjoy good law enforcement fiction, and I have read a few of the books that you're mentioning this morning, and I really enjoyed them. I had a question for the author. How much of your personal background in law enforcement do you use in your characters in your books, and is that in any way determine the personalities of your characters, your past experiences?
That's a good question. And in my books, I don't write about things that I don't know about. There's kind of a rule in writing, write what you know, but know what you're writing. So I write about things that I've actually experienced, and the characters in my books are actually people that I have known in my personal life, or they're people I've known, but I add a combination of character traits from other people that I've known too. So they're either close copies of people I've known, or a combination of personality traits of people that I've known.
I think that's very great. It makes it seem more real. And I kind of thought that you probably would take your past experiences and that they would show up in the book in some way, shape, or form, personalities. But I really enjoy your work, and I look forward to future books that you write.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye.
Thank you, caller. And Mike, as it turns out, that was one of the questions I was going to ask you that the caller just got into about the characters and so on and so forth. Now, in addition to the characters, the plots, you say these are generally our areas that you have familiarity with. You don't write about stuff that you don't know. So most of this was gained during your law enforcement experiences, or did you do specific research, say, about snipers, for example, before you wrote the book, or is it a combination of research and experience?
I had, in my earlier years, I had trained snipers. I had trained and commanded tactical team units, and so the details and the methods of operation and the technologies in the books are stuff that I've experienced myself. The cases and the scenarios in the cases are either cases I had experienced or that I had heard about in close proximity to me. And it took a little research to actually background and contact the departments where these cases happened and make sure I had my facts straight. But they're scenarios that have happened in my life or close to it.
So you're able to draw on all that time you spent in law enforcement and put it to good use in your books then?
I tried to, yes.
I got to compliment you on that because I have read, and you may have too, some authors who don't know what they're talking about and don't bother to research the subject. And with the internet today, I find that almost inexcusable to have basic facts or information wrong, and whether they get it from research or from experience or a combination. And whether it's fiction or nonfiction, I really think it's a disservice to the reader for the authors to just wing it. I don't know what your opinion is on that.
Well, it is. And when you're writing about a profession to lay people who are not involved in that profession, you can fool them some of the time, and you can they may find your book enjoyable if they don't realize that you don't have your technology nailed down, or if your procedures are not correct. But people that in the profession that read your book will see the errors and see the discrepancies, and you lose your credibility with those people. And since a lot of books are sold by word of mouth, they can do you some serious credibility damage in the long run.
And I found with people I talk to in personal experience that once you lose your credibility with a reader, it's tough to get back. I mean, they probably aren't going to buy you again after if if they find errors that really upset them, you're probably toast as far as they're concerned. And then you say the word of mouth, you know, they're going to be telling their friends and neighbors and family that this guy's not worth reading.
It's a real black eye that's hard to recover from. You're right.
Now you mentioned Sandpoint, Idaho. I may have a faulty memory here, but is that where Mark Furman, the former O.J. Simpson detective there in the O.J. case, is that where he moved to?
I don't know Mr. Furman. I've not spoken to him. He moved to northern Idaho. I don't know that he's living in the Sandpoint area, but last I heard, he was living in Idaho.
Yeah, Sandpoint, for some reason, is in my head. At any rate, that had nothing to do, just a matter of curiosity. I'm currently writing true crime about Las Vegas organized crime history, and I found that I've had to try to locate many of the now retired detectives and some FBI agents who worked the Vegas area during the organized crime heyday. And it seems like an awful lot of the retirees have moved to places like around Vegas, for example. Utah is a very popular retirement area, and a lot of them seem to get out of the big cities and move into the country. Have you found that to be true?
Yes, it is. And most policemen that work in a big city or in a smaller town, once you retire and get out of police work for good, there's an urge to get out and live a life you haven't lived, and there's so much more to life after your career that they want to get out of the town they worked in. They don't want to be a civilian in the town that they were a policeman in, and they like to go try other things in life. And part of moving to smaller towns is an attempt to simplify their lives, slow their pace a little bit, and enjoy a quality of life that they may not have had for the last 30 years.
Have you had to interview for any reason, or maybe as part of any research, former police officers, or haven't you had to get into that as far as locating people and interviewing them?
I have many times, Denny. The advantage I had was that I usually knew the officers, and I usually had stayed in touch with them. And if I didn't know where they were, I knew officers on their department, if they were close, that could help me locate them. So locating them wasn't a problem, and I found them to be very very open and honest and candid in their discussions with me. So that was never a problem either.
Yeah, that makes it much easier, and like you say, knowing the people or having a common contact, I think opens the door a lot quicker than having to build a rapport from square one.
It does. You know, it does.
Yeah, gaining the confidence and trust. Now, we were talking about research, and I want to kind of lead into your publishing business and by telling you my experience.
Okay.
When I started writing, and I had been in law enforcement too, and I thought I was a fairly sharp individual, you know, that I wasn't naive, I'd been around the block a few times. And I considered writing as a very benign business, the writing business, not just writing a manuscript, but the overall business of writing. And I didn't research writing. I had a story I wanted to tell, and I wrote the manuscript and so forth, and it was kind of a on-the-job training thing. Mm-hmm. And I found that there are sharks in the waters. People, be they publishers, agents, who are always looking for a live one that they can scam.
Right.
I found that, knowing what I know now, the old 20/20 hindsight, I should have, in conjunction with starting the manuscript, or even prior to, I should have researched what was involved, so I had some idea what to expect as I got the manuscript, what was involved with my publishing options, agents, and the different scams that are run and so forth. I didn't do it, and I regret that. And again, I think with the internet, it's there aren't many good reasons for failing to do that. Do you think a new author, in conjunction with their first effort, with their first manuscript, should also be researching the business of writing to have some idea of what they're getting into?
Absolutely, Denny. First of all, an author's first motivation to write is for their own enjoyment of the art itself, the enjoyment of writing. And you and I and everybody else initially get into writing because you either have a compelling story to tell or you do it for your own pleasure. But if you hope to market your product, you have to background investigate the business end of writing. And you're right. Once you get into the publishing business and the writing business and marketing of your product, it's almost as corrupt and dirty as some of the some of the other, like boxing industry and some of the other businesses
yes.
that have been corrupted. There's so many walls erected to keep new writers out. And my company is small, and we try to help young writers get a start. I've helped two other ladies start their own publishing business by doing their own books. And even if I can't take an author on and do their book, for whatever reason, I try to encourage them to seek out other publishers that will help them and mentor them. Nowadays, publishers and agents, they want finished products that are perfect. They don't want to have to take the time to edit the book, and they don't want to take on a project of someone to mentor and develop. They want that already done. And they want you to have an established sales record. Well, there's kind of a catch-22 because you can't get an established sales record without a publisher, someone to help you do that, and you can't get them unless you have an established sales record. And,
yes.
and most large
yes.
publishers won't talk to you without an agent. So I try to help people get started, and I just tell people that there is not the negative perception about self-published books that there used to be. Used to be, people wouldn't talk to you if you were self-published because they felt like your book wasn't good enough for a mainstream publisher to take the book. They didn't want it. Well, that's not true anymore. There's a lot of successful self-published books out there, and I encourage people to look into that. I would avoid the print-on-demand publishers. I would avoid
mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of people out there that will publish anything you write, charge you an arm and a leg, and do absolutely nothing to help you market the book, and they stick you with a load of books that you can't move. So
right.
there are people out there who will help you, but research it yourself. There are some good books out there on marketing, and if I can be of assistance to anybody, if they just go to Father's Press, I'll give people my thoughts on where to start, and that's how I did it, and it can be done.
Okay, Mike, we got listener who sent a text message here. Let me ask you the question that Christine
okay.
has posed. How do you determine where the location of the storyline will take place? I know you've got some San Francisco and so forth. How did you determine where the setting is going to be?
You know, I pick those settings. They're places I've been or places that I have heard about or seen or that I'd like to go. I basically pick places that, number one, that I would have either visited or would like to visit, or in my book, Dead Files, is set up in Oregon, that I picked a particular city that was of the right size and location to suit the characters and to suit my plot. So there's really no rule of thumb. I basically pick a place that I've either been and enjoyed or that I think would be suitable for that particular story.
Yeah, so the location has to fit in with your plot or your story.
And I'll give you an example. I picked Sandpoint, Idaho, because that happens to be, that particular region is the lower tip of the free-roaming grizzly bear range. And since there was a grizzly bear in that book, Prey, a predatory bear, I had to pick a location that had free-roaming bears to set the story in. I couldn't set a story about a grizzly bear down in Arkansas, because there's no grizzly bears. So that was the southern tip of free-roaming grizzly bears, and it's a high tourist location, so it made sense to the plot, too.
Christine, I hope that answers your question. Mike, you mentioned Father's Press. You want to give out your complete web address so people can go to that site and learn more about you, your books, or possibly contact you through your website?
Sure. It's www.fatherspress.com. That's no apostrophe. It's just FATHERSPRESS. It's pretty easy to find.
And they can order your books through the site?
They can. They can order the books. They can email me through that site. If they have trouble, frequently I have some mechanical difficulties, as we all do with websites. But if the website isn't friendly enough to them, they can write me, or there's a phone number on the site they can call me. Please have them get in touch with me, and I'll be happy to send them a book.
Okay, and you also will be open to give advice or give some thoughts on various topics or questions they might have?
I do. I get probably 1,000 query letters a year, people asking me to do their books. Of course, I can't do them all, but I try to give them a courteous answer, and if they need help, if they need pointed in the right direction, how to get started, I try to give them some help on that. And I've got authors that I've turned down that are writing me 2 years later asking me what they should do next in the process. And I actually help people if they're trying to find a reasonable printer to get their book in print. I turn them on to my printer, and even though I may not do their book, I try to help them get their book in print and help them develop a marketing strategy.
Excellent. So any of you listeners, if you need more information or would like to get Mike's thoughts on various writing-related topics, please take advantage of the offer and visit his website and give him a call or email him or whatever and see what he thinks about whatever your question is or whatever assistance he might be able to give you, or possibly just leading you in the right direction or to another person who can help you. Mike, now, what genres, do you have a specific genre or genres with your publishing company that you specialize in, or are you open to most everything?
Well, no, I'm not open to everything. Reason being is I do an author such a disservice if I take on their book, yet I don't have a marketing strategy, or I don't have doors that I can open to help sell books, and I obviously can't print books and have them sitting around my shop that don't move. So I don't take on a lot of different books. I stick to what I know, and I try to stick to what I can help the author develop a marketing strategy for. Obviously, I take on fiction because I write fiction myself. We also are taking on Christian books, and one of the passions I have is there's a quiet Reformation movement in this country to try to overturn some of the damage that humanism and some of the liberal attitudes have done to our country. And we're trying to write books that have some relevance to issues that deal with the decline of our country. We're in economic decline right now. We're having a lot of problems with our immigration policy, with the war on terrorism, and we're trying to deal with books that deal with those issues because they're so relevant to American people today. But we don't take on fantasy. We don't take on adult themes. We don't take on we do take on children's books, but we don't take on textbooks or things like that. So we try to stick to what we know.
And I believe your submission guidelines are listed on your site?
Yes, they are.
Okay. So, again, anybody who may have a manuscript they'd like to get published and want to see if Mike would be interested, you can check out the submission guidelines by visiting Father's Press. I'm sure all publishers appreciate it when writers do review the guidelines and follow the rules so they don't waste everybody's time.
True. I'm sorry, didn't mean to interrupt, but even if they have a question, if they'll just email me, a lot of times I'll take submissions as an electronic attachment to an email. So I like to save people some money, so rather than have to print out go through the paper and the ink to print out a manuscript, sometimes if they can send it to me in an email, I'll read enough of it to tell them if I can help them or not.
Okay. So even if the genre isn't necessarily something you would take personally, you still might be able to give them some advice.
Yes, we can. And one of the things is we can help them identify a target audience for that book, for their work, point them maybe to some organizations that actually support their cause. And we encourage people to have a platform, encourage people to have a the business of writing is not about selling your book, but it's promoting your platform, and your book is just a tool to help promote your platform. So we try to give people a proper perspective on that, and then point them in the right direction as to where they might look to find other people who would endorse the book and help them market the book.
Mike, let me ask you a question. And get your thoughts on this as a publisher. If you had two manuscripts that you reviewed and they were about equal in quality,
uh-huh.
both of them fit something that you would publish, the genre would be right, you thought the quality was about the same, one of these submissions included a marketing plan, and identified the target audience and how to reach that audience. The other had no mention of marketing. Would you be more inclined to take one of those over the other?
Yes, you would, and all publishers do. And the best advice I can give to an author is have a marketing plan. And if you don't have one, it's not hard to develop one. It's just a simple matter of determining who your target audience is, finding influential people, finding organizations, clubs, whatever, who also share that platform with you, and getting into the decision makers of those people, pitching your book to them, see if they'll endorse it, see if they'll put it on their website, list it as recommended reading, or put it in their library, and help you sell your book. So yes, we would take the person with the marketing plan over the one who didn't, simply because at some point in time, you have to sell books, and the author who's already a leg up on that and has already taken that step is going to hit the ground running and be marketing the book long before it ever gets off the presses. So, yeah, we would take the book that has the strong marketing plan first.
And, you know, and going back, I was telling you earlier how naive I was and didn't do the things I should have as a new author. An awful lot of authors, and I when I visit various writer sites and publisher sites and attend conferences or writers group meetings, I find surprising the number of new authors who think that when the manuscript is finished, their job is done. That
uh-huh.
from there on, they send it out, the first publisher is going to take it, blah, 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 and then they just sit back and wait for the phone to ring, you know, and the publisher's publicity person or marketing person says, okay, you got three signings and so on and so forth. And that's not, you know, unless maybe you already have the name recognition if you're a celebrity or something, but for the most part, new and unknown authors aren't going to find that happening. You got to get out and hustle yourself. Do you agree with that?
I agree, absolutely. And unless you have a lot of celebrity and about your name and a large sales record to back you up, you can't just throw a manuscript at a publisher and sit back and wait for the royalty checks to roll in. No book can realize its true sales potential without the hard promotion of the author, because the people don't want to hear from the publisher. They don't want to hear from a publicist. People want to get to know the author, and so that means you have to promote yourself and promote your book. And someday, if you're a John Grisham or one of those types, maybe you don't have to. But if you expect a publisher to take your book, be willing to work hard to promote yourself and the book. You're right.
Mike, I don't know where the time went to. We're down to our last 30 seconds. I want to thank you so much for being a guest this morning. You've been a lot of good information, a lot of good advice. And I really appreciate the fact that you're willing to assist new authors, even if you're not going to be the publisher of their book, that you're willing to help out as you can. So thank you very much for being a guest on the show, and the best luck to you in your writing career and your publishing career.
Well, Denny, thank you for having me, and it's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, Mike, take care. Bye-bye. And thank you very much for listening today, author Mike Smitley. And this is Denny Griffin. Until next time, have a very good week. Thank you and goodbye.